and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number
505. Don't blame me when it's wrong letter someone wrote in bad in the Google Doc, okay?
For Wednesday, the 17th of August, 2016, my name is Harry Lloyd, coming to you solo this week. Also, we missed a show, I believe it was last week, that would have talked about the BSB. That's mostly because, as many of you are aware, I have returned to England, and in the process of returning to England, I have moved house and don't have internet until, in theory, the 22nd of August, which should hopefully be Monday. So hopefully after the Czech GP, we will be back up and running in a full production mode. The reason I'm doing this solo is there was a bit of a crisscross in calendars between Skylar Vicroy and Dave Neal. So they had planned to do a show, but that didn't come together. And then Martin's in the UK, so he's therefore incommunicado. And then, as I said, I don't have internet, so I can't catch up and do it with anyone. So it's just easier for me to do a solo show. So hope everyone is okay with that. We obviously have the fantastic Austrian GP to talk about. But before that, that is a hopefully delicious can of Monster Energy The Doctor that I will be sipping through periodically in this show, as I have just gotten in from a day of work and I'm quite thirsty. There have been a couple of questions about what I am doing as my new job. As I said on the show, I have left Dorna. I'm now working in PR. I've gone over to the dark side, as they say, but I'm now the press officer for Mahindra Racing, and I'm also doing some stuff for BMW Motorrad UK. So be sure to go like Mahindra Racing, follow them on Instagram and Twitter, and all that goodness. And yeah, straight to it. So now for the most important part of the show, and a part of the show that we haven't done for a little while, I think I should have everyone who has donated and or subscribed. So bear with me while we go through a bit of a substantial list. A thank you to Carl Marsh for his continued subscription. A thank you to Keel and Carol for their continued subscription as well. Also to Keelan O'Carroll, who renewed his subscription, it looks like. I am just going through my emails, so that's why it's a bit funky. A huge thank you to Andrew Course for his most generous continued subscription to our fine show, The Motopod. A big thank you to Gary Shavitt for his continued subscription. Also to Joe Mueller for your continued subscription. That's a huge help to us. As is Bernard Summers' continued subscription. A big thank you there, Bernard. And then a big thank you also to Martin Gurney for his most generous continued subscription. And then a big thank you to Lars Pracken for your most generous donation there. Lars, nice note that we have some Dutch fans out there as well. Hopefully I go to the Dutch TT. Hopefully we'll be able to meet up. That being said, I will be at Brno and also in Silverstone, Misano, and Aragon. So if there are any Motopod fans going to any of those races, do shoot me a message, harry@motopodcast.com, or tweet at me at HLPhotoGP. And hopefully we can grab a cheeky beverage or something. Dave and I will be doing a bit more of a substantial meetup at Silverstone, probably on Friday, but we'll have some more details once we know about that one. Back to the old donations. A big thank you to Thomas Vale, or Valet, depending on how big of a Rossi fan you are, for your most generous continued subscription. Also to Brian Elliott, huge thank you there, Brian. B. Fetterplace, who we know quite well from the Motopod League, which we won't be doing this week because I don't have internet to check it, and I downloaded all of these emails at work, and anyway, it's a whole thing. And that is all of the donations and subscriptions. As always, a huge thank you to everyone who does do that. It is such a big help. You know, we've been able to do this show, as we said, for now over 500 shows. I think I said this is episode number 506. This is episode number 506, if I missed that part. I don't know. I'm going to be editing this on a train going to Stansted Airport, so excuse any bits that maybe are not as tight as usual. But if you would like to help keep the show nice and tight and trucking along, then you can go to motopodcast.com. And on the left-hand side of the page, there are some donation and subscription links. And all of that is a huge help. It all goes through PayPal. So you can either, the subscriptions are set at a couple of different amounts, or you can just donate however much you want. The subscriptions go for 12 months. So it's once a, once a month for 12 months. I don't know, maybe we could do a Patreon, one of those things. I'm not sure what sort of extra content you guys would want. If you have any ideas actually for extra content, motopod@motopodcast.com is the email address that goes to all the hosts. So you can send anything you want in there. Now I'm going to take a sip of my energy drink. Anyway, on to news and miscellaneous. Everybody's favorite Italian, Ennea Bastianini, looks likely to go to Strelia Galicia. We had mentioned, and by we I mean Speedweek, had written that he was off to the IO team and is requesting €250,000. Apparently that money was a bit too much, and it does seem like Honda are quite keen to keep him so he could transfer over to the factory Strelia Galicia outfit. You know, I still think Bastianini could win a title. I definitely think that Bastianini has the potential to win a title, especially if he's with a team like that. Grassini are very good. I'm just not sure if they have the technical support from Honda to win a championship with Bastianini. You know, all the Moto3 teams are level in terms of parts, or the same parts are available to every Moto3 team. But, you know, the factory teams, they'll get more support from HRC technicians if you're Honda, KTM technicians, et cetera, so there are still some levels within Moto3, as we talk about in Moto2. You know, there's definitely air quotes factory Moto2 teams. But so, while Bastianini looks to have a bright and promising future, someone who doesn't look to have a bright and promising future is Romano Fenati, who on Saturday evening of the Austrian GP at 9:30 Austrian time got told that he would not be allowed to race for the Sky VR46 team in Austria. Now, the exact reason for this varies depending on which news site you read, but sort of the one agreed upon factor is that he was physically violent to someone within the team. Now, Sky VR46 were very keen to stress that it wasn't to another one of the riders, but it does seem that Fenati got a bit frustrated and then threatened either Pablo Nieto, Uccio, his crew chief, or maybe even his suspension technician. As I said, depending on who you read, the story does vary. It also seems like this isn't the first time that Romano Fenati has done this. So as such, after consulting Valentino Rossi, the team suspended him for that race, and it looks as though Romano Fenati will not get to return to the Sky VR46 team. It also looks like his place in Moto2 is now most likely gone. You know, personally, I think that this, if the facts are to be believed, right, if what we read on sites like Speedweek and GP1 are correct, and that he was physically violent to someone in the team, it doesn't really matter who in the team he was physically violent for. If he hit anyone on the team, then he should not be in that team. The VR46 team made it quite clear that, you know, his actions, whatever they were, weren't in line with the team principles. So I think that that was definitely the correct call in that respect. Who will replace Fenati in the VR46 team this season? Still a question mark. There have been rumours about Marco Bezzecchi and also Lorenzo Della Porta. A bit more about Lorenzo Della Porta in a second. But the gossip on the news websites is that it will be Francesco Bagnaia, i.e. Pecco Bagnaia, who does step up to take his seat in the Moto2 team next year. Because, yeah, as I said, it seems like the further away we get from the event, the more certain it seems that Romano Fenati is now permanently out of the academy and has most likely shot his career in the foot. He did go to the Ongetta Revacold team that Nicolo Antonelli currently runs for. Antonelli, by the way, likely to go to the Red Bull squad to replace Brad Binder, because Binder will be moving up to Moto2 with Miguel Oliveira with the KTM Moto2 bike. But Fenati had gone to Ongetta Revacold to try and get on that bike for the Monday test after the race in Austria, and Honda vetoed it. So he already has Honda vetoing him, and I can't imagine that that decision would change in MotoGP. Moto2, Honda probably don't have a say because it's just their engine. I doubt that Yamaha would let Romano Fenati on one of their bikes, considering that Rossi ruled on that decision. Maybe Ducati would let him on a bike. But this does seem like a bit of a hard reputation for Fenati to shake. You know, we saw in Mugello in his rookie year when he raced around the warm-up lap and sat there on the line with his arms crossed that Fenati did have a bit of attitude. But there's a big difference between, you know, attitude and walking the walk and being physically violent to people. You know, that's just not on. So yeah, you know, really sad to see a career as bright as Fanati's. You know, there was no doubt that he had natural talent. He just didn't really have that consistency as we talked about so much. You know, sad to see Fanati go, but it does seem like it was a bit of his own doing. And I guess in many ways, it's a warning to young riders, you know, that you can have the world at your feet, but you do need to stay humble and you do need to stay focused because, you know, in many ways, it's a privilege to make your living from racing. And, you know, you really need to respect everyone that you work with and everyone that's around you. So moving away from that slightly dark and somewhat depressing topic, I mentioned Lorenzo Della Porta before. He has signed to join the Aspar Mahindra team for 2017 with an option for 2018. As we said, that caused many people in the paddock to speculate that Francesco Bagnaia would move to Moto2. I believe negotiations are still ongoing with Bagnaia for a number of teams. But yeah, it looks like, as I said, the Sky VR46 team, they only have one spot in Moto2. I'm sure because it's Rossi, they could quite easily get a second one if they wanted. But with Fanati out, it doesn't look like they will need that. And yeah, that was pretty much the Moto3 news. As we said, the Moto3 silly season is starting to turn a bit. It's always quite interesting, especially for some of these more high-profile guys. The Fanati thing's really crazy. You know, I can't think of another time that something like this has happened, apart from maybe Anthony Gobert when he showed up. I think it was to a Suzuki test in Brno back in the 90s when he showed up to a test high and understandably then got kicked from the team. But, you know, unfortunately, Gobert's life from that point on started a very steep and rapid downward trajectory to where the last thing I heard about Anthony Gobert was that he stole an old lady's purse up on the Gold Coast in Australia. And therefore got fired from his job at Subway. But yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen to Fanati, and Fanati can work something out. And I don't know, let's just hope that he hasn't thrown his career away already. So that was that. Now we go over to the BSB season, which, much like Moto3, takes a bit of a while to get going, get churning. Oh, I forgot. There has been some news breaking today. Alvaro Bautista, he has signed for the Aspar Ducati team on a GP16, and then Avintia will keep their lineup for next year. So that'll be Loris Baz and Hector Barbera. So we only have one seat left in MotoGP. It is the second Aspar seat. It'll either be Yoni Hernandez or Eugene Laverty, I'd guess. Although Laverty has made it very clear that he doesn't want to be on a GP15. He wants the same machinery as his teammate. But Ducati have said that both Aspar and Avintia are only getting one GP16. So I'm guessing that the rumours that Laverty will go to World Superbikes with Aprilia, probably a Milwaukee Aprilia type deal, are probably quite correct. But anyway, speaking of an Irish rider, Ireland's quite close to the United Kingdom. I'm not sure if the United Kingdom is Britain. There's some difference between the United Kingdom and Britain. But anyway, for the purpose of this segue, BSB, they're also in their silly season. As I started to say before, I got sidetracked. This is why you sort of need internet to do this show. But anyway, BSB silly season is churning. Ryuichi Kiyonari is out of Bennett Suzuki. That was a pause for everyone's shocked gasps. But yeah, no, that's no surprise. I mean, you know, Keo hasn't really seemed on it. He hasn't really even seemed to be trying, in all honesty, in the last few races. There isn't any word on his replacement yet. The hot thinking was that maybe it would be Danny Buchan, as he had left Moto Rapido Ducati. But Buchan today, Wednesday, confirmed that he will be riding a Tsingtao MS or MSS? No, it's MSS, because it was MSS Colchester Kawasaki. Anyway, Danny Buchan, he'll be riding a Kawasaki for the Tsingtao team for the remainder of the season, so he won't be replacing Keo on that second Bennett's bike. Then in turn, Stuart Easton, who had been kicked out of the ePayMe team to be replaced by Brock Parks, Stuart Easton then takes over Danny Buchan's seat. And yeah, there's currently, so right now in BSB, that leaves two open seats. There's the Bennett seat and then the Smith BMW seat. Keo could in theory go to the BMW seat. I mean, Keo fought for a championship when on a BMW. Again, I don't know. It's, yeah, BSB silly season gets quite silly. But we'll know when they're out at Cadwell, not this weekend, but I think the weekend after. And then we also had a bit of drama in the BSB paddock, as we love. The GB Moto boss has been grumbling in the press that Ducati, i.e. PBM Budweiser Ducati, are getting too much factory support from Ducati, and that that's not in the spirit of BSB, that famous phrase, in the spirit. To this, Kev Stevenson, the one of the head mechanics for Shaky Burn, immediately posted a picture of Kawasaki race boss Ichiro Yoda with Mark Smith Halverson, the GB Moto boss from last year, and then also posted a link to an MCN article where Mark Smith Halverson was quoted as saying he's very pleased to be receiving factory Kawasaki report support for the year. So that's a bit awkward. As we said, it seems like the GB Moto guys are struggling a bit. And hopefully they can turn it around at Cadwell. There have been some teams out testing in Cadwell ahead of the race, but no times from that one. That's where we saw Buchan on the MSS Zingtao bike, and also we saw Stuart Easton out on the Moto Rapido bike. Now we go on to the Austrian GP. Couple of comments about the track. I was there at the circuit, and it is absolutely stunning. It is probably the nicest circuit in terms of facilities and just everything about that that I've ever been to. Austria in many ways is like a fancy Germany, so already you're operating on a very good base there. But this circuit, you can really tell that there's a lot of Red Bull money there because everything just works smoothly. There was no issues with, getting into parking or people scanning and not scanning your passes. There were no grumpy attendants like in, say, Barcelona or Mugello. Everything just worked so smooth. And as I'm sure you saw from people like David Emmett, the media center was incredible. There was, again, no issues there. No one complaining like they do in Le Mans. It was A++. If we can hold, in terms of being someone who now air quotes works in the air quotes MotoGP media, end quotes, if we could just have 18 races at that circuit, that would be pretty cool. I mean, I guess we can go to Mugello once or twice, but the internet there can be quite bad. But anyway, we had lots of people learning the circuit. There was some testing there, but especially in Moto3, most of the Moto3 field was new to the circuit as KTM had rented the track when the Moto2 and Moto3 test was on and therefore didn't allow Honda or Mahindra there. And it should come as no surprise that it was a KTM 1-2 in qualifying, but there was a bit of a surprise actually because all weekend Brad Binder had looked the man to beat. But it was Juan Mir who pipped him to pole. Both did low 136s. Mir with a 136.228. Binder with a 136.335. Juan Mir's first ever pole position in his rookie season. I believe it was his 11th GP start because it was the 10th round of this year, and he did one round in Phillip Island last year. So yeah, so really good for Juan Mir. Since the Sev, he's definitely had the potential. He didn't have the consistency in the Sev. He was really, really quick, but crashed too much. This year, he's been slowly just steady building, and his results are now starting to come in. So it was Mir ahead of Binder, ahead of Bastianini. Then Aaron Canet, again, doing really, really well. Another rookie from the Sev. He led the second row ahead of Fabio Quartararo. Then Francesco Bagnaia, the leading Mahindra, in sixth. He was originally seventh, but then Nicolò Belega, he exceeded track limits. Track limits were a theme throughout the weekend. They had to change turn number 10, I believe it was, to make it a bit safer, and lots of the riders were running out there and at turn three, and no one could keep it between the lines, basically. But anyway, Belega was seventh, Philipp Oertl eighth, Fabio De Giannantonio, he was ninth, ahead of Bo Benschneider in 10th. Then Romano Fenati was meant to be 11th, but he obviously wasn't there because he got sacked. So everyone moved up one. Jorge Navarro had qualified 18th, started 17th because of the Fenati thing. Disappointing weekend for him. He really couldn't get it to work, but with Bastianini in third and Canet in fourth, it was clear that the Honda did work there, and it was maybe a bit of a problem for Navarro. Not good for him when, as we've said so much, it's really Binder's cha it was Binder's championship to lose before this weekend, and it's looking even more like that now. So then we got onto the Moto3 race, and it was what you'd expect from a Moto3 race. not an absolutely massive group like we've seen in past races racing at the front, but there was a nice little group of about five riders who swapped positions there throughout. We had Brad Binder, Juan Mir, and Nenea Bastianini. They made a very early break, and the three of them sort of just tucked in together and tried to escape, but Fabio Quartararo and Philip Oerter were able to stick with them. So all five of those guys were sort of dicing for most of the race. Everyone had their own little turn at leading, but eventually it would become Philip Oerter would drop off the back of them just a tiny bit. Not too much. And then the battle for victory really became between Juan Mir and Brad Binder in the final laps. You know, as I said, Binder definitely came into this race as a favourite, not just because of, you know, his incredible past results, but also just because of his pace throughout the whole weekend. Everyone was looking at Binder, but it was Juan Mir who did it with an excellent last lap. And, you know, that's the sort of stuff that had Juan Mir challenging for that CEV title. And he did it. He pipped Binder to the line under 0.3 of a second, and Juan Mir converted his first pole position into his first ever win, the first win for the Leopard team since they switched to KTM machinery. So very good for him. 1-2 for KTM, obviously, at their home in Austria. Pretty important for them to get that. And Nenea Bastianini would seal third position, just pipping Fabio Quartararo, the second time this year that Quartararo has lost out on a drag to the line, so no doubt he was a bit frustrated. But yeah, Juan Mir, really, really good weekend from him. I think that much like Fabio De Giannantonio, is that Mir will now probably have a really strong set of results. You know, before his big problem was qualifying, and this weekend he proved that he can qualify. So now that he has that feather in his cap, and he also has the added confidence that comes with a win, I think we need to watch out for Juan Mir. Is he going to challenge for the championship? Probably not. Well, almost certainly not. He's has 104 points less than Brad Binder, so he needs to do a lot of winning, and Binder needs to do a lot of not finishing. But no, I think Juan Mir, his future, as all the riders in the Leopard team, none of their futures are secure just yet. But I think Juan Mir with this has made himself probably the hottest property on the Moto3 grid. Bastianini again doing well. He's now found some form after that rough start to the season. As we said, his championship hopes are pretty much done this year already. But, you know, he could do it next year. Bastianini now becomes like Binder was this year as being one of the older guys there. Then we had Philip Oerter in fifth. Good result from him. Jorge Martin, the leading Mahindra, in sixth. That was Jorge Martin's best ever Grand Prix result. Bo Benschneider, he was in the top 10. Really good to see him there. Good to see that he's starting to come on. He will be with that Red Bull team next year. Nicolò Belega, he was ninth. Not his best result, but, you know, still consistent points. Interestingly enough, Belega is leading the Rookie of the Year standings, but both Mir and Kyrell Itampawi have won races, but Belega hasn't. But, you know, that's the consistency, and that's what won Belega the SEV Championship last year. Then in 10th, Livio Loi. So good result from Livio Loi, but once again, Livio Loi, he's top 10 one weekend and nowhere the next. Bagnaia 11th, Guevara 12th, Andrea Locatelli 13th. Maria Herrera got 2 points in 14th, really good for her, ahead of Hiroki Ono, who rounded out your point scorers. Unfortunately for his championship, Jorge Navarro did not finish the race. He was doing incredibly well. As we said, he started way down the field and was charging. Looked like he had the pace to close in on those leading five riders, but then he crashed. And because of that crash, Brad Binder now has 179 points, which is 67 more points than Jorge Navarro. So, in all honesty, I don't want to jinx it, because Brad is a great guy, and I'd hate to be the reason, but I can't see anyone taking this championship away from Binder. You know, Fanardi's now out. Jorge Navarro, 67 points. It's going to take more than you know, the Danny Kent levels of inconsistency for Binder to be shaken. It's really, you know, one and a half hands on the trophy, in all honesty. 60 points, so he could win it at the second last round of the year he could win it at the third last round of the year if he keeps that points gap, because after the third last race of the year, there would only be 50 points on offer. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Binder can do that. The third last round of the year is he could do that in Australia. So a South African winning something in Australia. There's probably a rugby joke in there, but I don't want to make it because it's probably bad about Australia. But anyway, there are a number of actually really interesting battles as we go down the championship table, particularly now that Romano Fanati has left the scene and Francesco Bagnaia only 3 points away from third place. So Bagnaia could potentially net a top three and also top Italian. Belega still doing very well in fifth place. He's on 82, so only 11 points behind Fanati. You know, he could also finish third. Then only 1 point behind Belega is Bastianini. As we said, Bastianini coming onto a lot of form, so don't rule him out. Then Juan Mir has jumped up to seventh place with 75 points. So it's a bit sketchier for him to finish third, but he still could. So that battle for third can be really, really exciting, I think. So Mir 7th, Fabio De Gea and Antonio 8th, really good for him, Nicolo Antonelli 9th, Jakob Kornfeil 10th, Kyrie Dampaui 11th, as we said, 54 points, 50 of those points coming from his two wet weather wins. Paui had a disastrous weekend and finished 27th in the race. I mean, talk about inconsistency. It's heartbreaking to watch that you just can't find any pace in the dry. But, you know, if you're a team manager, do you keep him around just because he's so quick in the wet and he's guaranteed to get you all that coverage? I think I would. But then again, I'm not a team manager. Andrea Locatelli in 12th. Fabio Quartararo 13th. Still the lowest of the three Leopard riders. And the only one not to have a podium finish so far this year. And those are most of the big guys. Yep, those are most of the big guys there in terms of Moto Tres, i.e. Moto 3, for those of you who don't speak Espanol. And then on to Moto 2. No surprise that Johann Zarco, the Brad Binder of Moto 2, he was on pole position, a 129.255, put him just ahead of Franco Morbidelli with a 129.367. So nice and tight between those two. Then Tom Lutti completed the front row. Marcel Schroeder, incredible result from him for fourth place. This second row in Moto 2 is a bit of a head scratch, I'm not going to lie. I mean, if you had shown this to me and I hadn't been watching the sessions, I would have said, you're what? Was it wet? But no, it was dry. And it was Marcel Schroeder in fourth ahead of Alex Marquez and Axel Pons. That was the sound of my head exploding from that second row. Then behind them was Sam Lowe's, Takaki Nakagami, and Alex Rins. Just let me restate. Marcel Schroeder, Alex Marquez, Axel Pons were ahead of Sam Lowe's, Takaki Nakagami, and Alex Rins. I'll give everyone a moment to let that sink in. So, yeah, you know, it's good to see these guys coming good. You know, I don't really mean it negative. You know, I'm just trying to make a bit of a jokey joke out of the whole situation. But it is good to see these guys coming in and show a bit more of their potential. You know, certainly me as a fan, I never want to see any rider fail. So it's always nice to see these guys mixing it up a bit. Of course, the big question was whether Alex Marquez would stay upright. Further down the field, we had Jonas Folger in 10th, Agata 11th, Baldessari 12th, Cortese 13th, Edgar Pons 14th, which I think is his best qualifying of the year by a long way, ahead of Danny Kent, Hafiz Sarin, Mattia Pazzini, Miguel Oliveira, Luca Marini, Julian Simon, rounding out the top 20. Simone Corsi, a bit of a difficult weekend for him in 22nd place, with Robin Mulhouser once again bringing up the rear. Now, the Moto2 race, I must admit that I've not seen at all. I watched some highlights, but it seemed like a bit of a ding-dong battle. At least for third place. You know, Johann Zarco, once again, he sprinted away into the distance and continued. I think this is now his fourth win in five races or something. Zarco is just absolutely incredible this season. You know, he's the best defending champion we've ever had in Moto2, certainly. So it's great to see him still doing so well. And much like Binder, you know, he just seems untouchable. So good for the Frenchman. You know, he's going to need as much confidence as he can get when he moves up to MotoGP, because we've seen that is a big and scary step to make for any rider. So yeah, then behind him there was a bit more of an exciting battle going on, and that was for second and third place, and that had Franco Morbidelli, Alex Rins, and Tom Lutie dicing it out. Marcel Schroeder tried to stay with them but couldn't quite do it. And a really great move from Morbidelli and Rins on the last lap of Moto2 to get ahead of Lutie. Morbidelli finished second, his best ever finish in the Moto2 race. And then Alex Rins was in third. So good for his championship, but not great that Zarco still extended the points lead. But Rins is looking much healthier than Sam Lowes was, who had crashed once in the race and was then pushing to try and make up as many positions as he could to, you know, salvage some points. And then he pushed a bit too hard because his right handlebar, as he was going to brake, collapsed, which then obviously caused him to crash. And that sort of sparked a bit of debate about the restart rules. You know, obviously BSB has these rules where if your bike touches the ground, I think it's if the handlebar touches the ground, I don't know the exact wording in the BSB rulebook, but if your bike touches the ground, you're not allowed to restart in a race. And this Sam Lowes crash was sort of evidence of why, aside from spilling oil and stuff like that everywhere, why that rule is in existence, is it is a big safety thing. So, yeah, luckily Lowes walked away unhurt, but it could have been much worse. So maybe that's something that they do need to look at. You know, for me, it is a very isolated incident, and I think that there should be more responsibility and more emphasis placed on the rider and the marshals to check over the bike after it's been crashed to decide if they can restart. You know, riders, I don't know how to phrase this. Riders are very focused, so they're going to ignore a lot of things. So I guess that's a bit of an issue that you could come into. But that's when I think you have to have the marshals, you know, be able to have a bit more power over the riders. And I don't know how you'd stop a rider from snatching his or her bike, off the marshals, but maybe you do need to do it. So bit of a disastrous weekend there for Lowes. That's now two DNFs in a row. So that's now 50 points he's back on Johann Zarco. So I think that could be championship over for Lowes, unless something terrible happens to Johann Zarco. So we had Thomas Lutie fourth, Marcel Schroeder fifth, great result from him. Alex Marquez sixth, really good result for both Schroeder and Marquez. Marquez managing to stay upright. Nakagami seventh, ahead of Baldessari in eighth, Axel Pons ninth, Agata 10th, Cortese 11th, Danny Kent surprisingly in 12th, Danny Kent finding a bit more pace this weekend, Mattia Pessini in 13th spot, Oliveira in 14th, Julian Simon 15th ahead of Vierge, Marini, Vinales, Gardner in 19th ahead of Edgar Pons, who dropped quite far back from his qualifying position. So all in all, a pretty standard Moto2 race. And the championship is also looking pretty standard. Johann Zarco, 176 points, which puts him 34 points ahead of Alex Rins on 142. Then Sam Lowes has 121 points, so he's 55 points back on Johann Zarco. So really, Lowes, for the next couple of races, it needs to be Lowes, Rins, Lutie, Zarco. If it finishes like that for the next two or three races, that would be ideal. So Lutie's fourth with 106 points, then Nakagami fifth with 92, Franco Morbidelli sixth with 86, Jonas Folger seventh with 83, Agata is eighth with 71, and then so on and so forth down the order. So yeah, Moto2 Championship sort of beginning to take its final form, I believe. You know, we could have a bit of some interesting stuff further down, but I don't know. Moto2, yeah, I just hope that they produce some interesting races in the rest of the year. And with that, we move on to MotoGP. There was drama from the start in MotoGP. We had Danny Pedrosa. He had a massive crash. I believe it was an FP1. He fell off. He was fine, but his bike hit the air fence, deflated it, and bounced on top of the tyre walls. You know, as we said on the last podcast or a couple of podcasts ago, a couple of the riders were a bit worried about safety. Luckily, no one was injured in any of the crashes in terms of hitting the walls, which was one of the primary concerns. We will get to Jack Miller in a second. So Pedrosa, he crashed and he was a bit shaken up, and that sort of upset his whole weekend. And then I believe it was Saturday. Yeah, it was Saturday. That Marc Marquez, he had a crash at, I think, the same spot that Pedrosa had a crash, and Marquez had to sort of jump off his bike to avoid hitting Pedrosa in the crash, and with that, Marquez dislocated his shoulder, but as one does, he went to hospital, got it popped back in, and was all good. You know, I think he lost a bit of power in it, but overall, you know, just classic Mark Marquez day, really. So those were two of the more high profile crashes. Eugene Laverty hit a very spectacular crash. I believe that was at turn 8. I got that on photo sequence. So be sure to go to HL Photo on Facebook and check out all of those photos. Shameless plug. Or you can go to Eugene Laverty's Facebook page. But yeah, pretty big crash for Eugene Laverty. Luckily, he walked away unhurt. Jack Miller actually crashed at the exact same spot as Eugene Laverty during a morning warm-up on Sunday. Unfortunately, Miller's crash not only hurt his bike, but also him. Miller broke the radius bone in one of his wrists and also cracked the T6 vertebra. So he was unable to race and still has a big question mark about the Czech GP, which it's such a disaster for Miller because the crash, you know, it wasn't a silly high side or anything like that. It was a low side and just, you know, bounced through the gravel badly. And it comes at the worst possible time because Miller was starting to get more consistent, was starting to get those top 10s. And now he's going to have to miss at least a race, probably two in all honesty. You know, even if he does race in Brno, he's definitely not going to be fit, 100% fit for it. So it's just such a shame for Miller. Would have liked to have seen him properly fit. But yeah, good that you know, it wasn't worse. Also, Miller brought his dog Bruce to the GP. Be sure to go to Jack Miller's Instagram if you haven't seen little Brucey. It was a very comical sight to after MotoGP, I think it was FP1, to see Jack Miller taking his dog. It's quite small dog because it's a puppy for a wee. So yeah, that was very interesting. But anyway, we got on to Q1, you know, usual suspects down there, but it was an unusual suspect who advanced out of there. It was Eugene Laverty. He advanced first, the first time he's ever gone through to Q2 in his MotoGP career, to my knowledge. He advanced ahead of Cal Crutchlow, so good for them. And now something quite interesting here. We have the top speeds written down. Eugene Laverty, 305 k's an hour. Cal Crutchlow, 302. Daniele Petrucci, 306. But interestingly, it's actually the Aprilias who had the highest top speed with 307 k's. Or not the highest speed, the second highest speed, because Michele Pirro, he got 312. That's because he's on a GP16. But 307 k's an hour from both the Aprilias. So they're not slow bikes when the straight's long enough. So yeah, Eugene Laverty and Cal Crutchlow, they advanced through. Jack Miller had crashed in Q1, but he was unhurt. He just qualified down in 10th, i.e. 20th on the grid. But he obviously wouldn't race, so what does that matter? And then we went through to MotoGP Q2, and Ducatis had been absolutely walking the field all weekend. You know, we had that sort of inkling from private testing there that the Ducati would be pretty effing quick. And Eno and Dovizioso were happy to help us. Throughout the course of the weekend, it seemed, as you'd sort of expect, that Dovi had the race pace, but Iannone was definitely putting in a hot lap or two. And a hot lap Iannone did put in qualifying. He's at a 123.142 with a top speed of 310 k's an hour to qualify on pole position for the Austrian GP ahead of Valentino Rossi, Andrea Dovizioso, and then Jorge Lorenzo in fourth. Both Rossi and Lorenzo really pulled out something a bit special on Saturday for those qualifying positions. It had looked like there'd be no touching Ducati, but both of those guys were able to rough them up in qualifying a bit. Mark Marquez fifth with his dislocated shoulder ahead of Maverick Vinales. Cal Crutchlow seventh, so not too bad for him, ahead of Scott Redding. Alicia Spargo. Spargo was another one who crashed on cold tyres, and he broke a finger on his, I believe it was left hand. He was ahead of Hector Barbera, Eugene Laverty, 11th, and then Danny Pedrosa, whose wonderful season continues. He was 12th, so a bit rough for him. And then we got onto the race, and those opening laps were absolutely excellent. We had, you know, six of the fastest riders in the world all trading places. I was going to say paint, but I don't think there were that many, you know, super crazy moves. All the opening laps were really, really interesting, and then as was, you know, sort of predicted, the Ducatis did eventually break away from the Yamahas. Try as they might, Lorenzo and Rossi were just unable to stick with them. And then it became very much a chess game between the two Ducatis. Iannone had gone for the softer option rear tyre, which was sort of against the grain of everyone else on the grid. And, you know, people wondered whether it would last race distance. But Iannone proved that he's not just a one-lap wonder and a bit of an idiot, but he's actually quite intelligent. He seemed to slow down the race pace a bit. You know, both him and Dovi were still going quick enough to pull away from the Yamahas, but Iannone definitely wasn't pushing. And so then when it did come down to the final laps, he was able to break away from Andrea Dovizioso and score Ducati's first win since Casey Stoner in Phillip Island in 2010. So it was the Maniac. The Maniac was just crazy enough to win. And as was sort of expected, Ducati dominated in the end the Red Bull Ring. It turned out that the Ducati wings worked extraordinarily well with the Red Bull wings. And yes, Enone won the race with Andrea Dovizioso second. That's only the, I believe, second time in history that Ducati have gotten a 1-2. I think the other 1-2 was probably Stoner and Caparossi. Italian GP, I want to say. Let me Google that. No, actually, I won't bother Googling that. That'll be a fact for next episode. We had those two teammates, then we had the Yamaha teammates. They were battling for third place, and it was Jorge Lorenzo who came out on top of Valentino Rossi under half a second, splitting those two. Really good to see Lorenzo back to a bit of form. You know, neither of those Ducatis are in championship contention, so I hope that Lorenzo can continue this form to, you know, close up the championship a bit. Rossi in fourth, and then Marc Marquez in fifth. So, you know, realistically, aside from one of those Yamahas winning the race, this was probably the best result for the championship. But once again, Marc Marquez not really bothered by finishing fifth, given the circumstances of having a dislocated shoulder and just not really having the greatest weekend overall, and he still has a very healthy points lead. Then Maverick Vinales was sixth. Danny Pedrosa eventually fought his way up to seventh place. So, you know, you can't rule Pedrosa out. Sure, he's not quite in the form that he once was, but hopefully he'll get there again. Scott Redding was then the top independent bike in eighth, ahead of Bradley Smith in ninth, Paul Espargaro 10th, Daniele Petrucci in 11th. Petrucci and Eugene Laverty had a bit of a coming together in the last corner. Apparently Petrucci crashed into Laverty. Petrucci was then given some penalty points and will have a three-place grid penalty in Assen. Eugene Laverty not too happy, as Eugene Laverty was having a really good race. Pirro was 12th, Loris Baz 13th, out of Tito Rabat in 14th, then Cal Crutchlow, Alvaro Bautista, Yoni Hernandez, Laverty eventually crossed the line 18th, as we said. Bridle, Alicia Spargo didn't finish, nor Detective Barbera. So the reason that Cal Crutchlow, Bautista, Hernandez, and Bridle are so far down is because they all jumped the start. Hector Barbera also jumped the start. Hector Barbera did not see the flag or did not see the warning on his pit board. So Hector Barbera got black flagged. I'm not sure what set off the jump start. You know, I'm not sure if it was I think Cal Crutchlow was the leading one of the jump starters. So maybe it was a thing of, you know, riders were focused on him, or maybe they heard his engine, which set off that chain reaction. Both the Aprilia riders then got absolutely blasted by Aprilia Racing boss Albesiano, I think that's how you say his name. He said that, you know, mistakes like this just cannot happen. It's unacceptable that we didn't score any points for the first time this season. Stefan Bradl and Alvaro Bautista are probably quite happy after that, telling off that they're going to different teams. I think I said Bautista's going to Aspire Ducati next year. If I didn't, he's going to Aspire Ducati next year. And as I said, Hector Barbera got black flagged. Alicia Spargo hit to pull in because the pain in his hand was just too much from that broken finger that he had. So yeah, that was the MotoGP race. I think it was after the race it was revealed that Dorna are working on some technology to basically show what teams show on the pit board on the rider's dash. Ever since Saxon Ring, there's been this big conversation, at least in the media, about ship-to-shore radio. You know, should riders have it in their helmet? Valentino Rossi quite clearly wanted it. Valentino Rossi, again, quite in favour of this new technology, but a lot of the other riders are a bit cautious. Personally, I'm also a bit cautious. Fair enough, displaying things like red flag and penalties on the dashboard and things that impact other riders' safeties. But, you know, part of MotoGP, in my opinion, is reading your pit board. You know, you can either choose to read it or not choose to read it. You know, it's a skill to be able to read your pit board when you're going down the straight, just like it's a skill to be able to corner the way they do, or to, you know, just ride like they do. And I think that this is something that, you know, some riders are better at it than others, and, you know, that will help some riders more than others. So what's your opinion on this whole MotoGP pit board on the dash thing? Motopod at motopodcast.com. Write in your opinions, everyone. Very interested to hear what you all have to say on that one. You know, if it does get implemented, I don't think it'll be the end of the world. Certainly it'd be a bit nicer if we did keep it like that. You know, F1, that's one of the things that I'm not a huge fan of in F1, is that, you know, the teams do have so much input over what happens. And sure, the teams wouldn't be able to talk to riders with this system, but they can still show them messages. And, you know, riders and teams develop three-letter combinations that can tell a rider to do so many things, and that's for the pit board. So imagine what could be said if a rider can, you know, spend the whole straight looking down at their dash to figure out what's being said. I think that it brings the engineers a bit too much into the race, and that, you know, it should be more what I like about MotoGP. And I think what most people like about MotoGP is, in many ways, it is more, air quotes, pure racing. You know, it's one person out there on the bike, and it's their responsibility, with a little help from their team, as I said, from the pit board, but more or less it's one person's responsibility to decide what to do in that race. And they don't have someone like Christian Horner whispering in their ear telling them to change to this fuel map. You know, that rider has to know to change to that fuel map and all that sort of stuff. So I personally hope it doesn't happen, but anyway, I digress. Onto the championship standings. It is still Marc Marquez who does lead the way with 181 points. That puts him 43 points, I believe, ahead of Jorge Lorenzo in second, 138 points. In turn, Rossi is 14 points behind Lorenzo in third overall. So yeah, Rossi still needs a bit of a miracle to win this championship. Jorge Lorenzo needs to start winning a lot more races and hope that Marc Marquez's shoulder becomes a pretty big problem. Lorenzo usually goes really, really well at Brno. Marc Marquez has had some difficulties there in the past. So maybe this will be the start of a Lorenzo renaissance. I'd certainly like to see Lorenzo push Marquez till the end for the title. You know, right now it looks like about Phillip Island is when we're going to have all three titles decided. So I'd like to see it go down to the wire as it did last year. Danny Pedrosa still holds on to fifth place with 105 points, which is 12 points more than Maverick Vinales. Maverick Vinales is fifth. Andrea Iannone jumps up to sixth place, thanks to his win with 88 points ahead of Andrea Dovizioso. So we now do have, seven factory bikes in the top seven spots. Alicia Spargo, he's in 12th, not having the best season. But, we could very easily have the eight factory bikes in the eight top slots, which is, you know, really what you'd expect. Paul Spargo is still the leading satellite rider. 78 points in 8th place, ahead of Hector Barbera. Barbera no longer the leading Ducati after that Ducati 1-2 from Dovi and Iannone. Well, that should be Iannone and Dovi. Scott Redding in 10th, ahead of Eugene Laverty. Alicia Spargo, Jack Miller 13th. Bradley Smith tied on points with Miller, but since Miller has the win, he goes up. Cal Crutchlow, he's 15th with 41 points, ahead of Stefan Bradl, Alvaro Bautista, Petrucci. Michele Pirro still has more points than Tito Rabat and Loris Baz and Yoni Hernandez. Hernandez only has 3 points, which is a bit, I don't know, is it surprising? I don't know. I think it's surprising. I feel like Hernandez would have more than 3 points. I mean, Loris Baz has 11 points and he missed like a quarter of the season because of his injured foot. So yeah, Yoni, the report card home to your mum says that you must try harder, Yoni. So if you could try just a little harder, that would be excellent. And I think that is all that we have for now. For this lovely little MotoPod show. Once again, apologies that we did miss last week, but the logistics of moving and real life do sometimes get in the way of this show. But as I said, I do have the internet people coming on Monday the 22nd. So if you know anyone at Sky, that's Sky Internet, people out there in MotoPod land, please do shoot them a message and make sure that they come to my house. I'm going to take a whole day off work to wait around for the internet man or woman. I don't know. It could very well be a woman. I also need to look up the post office in Reading because they delivered my router, but I wasn't here because I was at work. And yeah, as I said, if you are at the CheckGP, be sure to shoot me a message on the old email, harry@motopodcast.com or on Twitter at HLPhoto. And yeah, I would love to meet up with anyone at the track or outside the track. I am staying in the city centre, so should hopefully be able to meet up with whoever is there over the course of the weekend. And that is more or less the show that we have for you today. So thank you everyone for listening to my somewhat incoherent ramblings. As I said, it was just a bit of a hectic show because not having internet makes things quite difficult. But she's all good, and I hope you've enjoyed this. And I'm going to stop rambling now, and I'm going to get some dinner because I haven't eaten since midday, and it's now 8:30. So I'm a bit hungry. Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope that my Monster Energy slurping didn't disturb you too much. We're not sponsored by Monster Energy. If Monster Energy or anyone wants to sponsor us, motopod@motopodcast.com is the email address. Thank you once again to everyone who donated. And hopefully this is the first show on our back to regular schedule. Fingers crossed and pray to the gods at Sky Internet. Have a good one, everyone. I'll catch you next week.